Hi, this is Warwick Davis, and you're listening to the Fidey Filibuster.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Friday Filibuster, back from a at least five week hiatus, but we are here for the new fall season of the Friday Filibuster. I'm Dave Johnson, joined by the usual gaggle, Mac McIntyre.
Hackadoo.
Eric Gastroslager.
Hello.
Daryl Loomis.
Well, here I am.
Well, here you are. And I think we're all coming off of big-time life events, I think. I mean, we've got, Daryl, you had a huge move, right, to Albuquerque,
big
correct?
Move. Yeah.
You're still there, move. Right? You're still there?
Still. I haven't washed out yet.
That's good. That's good. Mac, obviously, new job in Western Mass, right?
That's right.
Eric, what's your big life event? I mean, you got the kiddos, obviously, but
I was waiting to see what you had because I couldn't think of anything.
Yeah, that's
happened.
Yeah, I was trying to. I mean,
I guess I'm coming off the end of a free month of Hulu Plus.
That's a big.
So that's pretty big.
That's
sweet. Did you watch a lot of stuff?
So, I did.
So Eric is at a crossroads.
I have to decide whether I'm going to re-up for the fall season.
Right. So that'll be a big one. And myself, actually, what prompted our hiatus was my retina detached on me. So I essentially went through a 5 week experience of what a typical movie Daryl will watch on a Friday night, I would say, if that makes sense. And part of me is not kidding because there was a sequence within these weeks where I was sitting down in a brightly lit room on a seat with a plastic bag over my face. My eye exposed, propped open by Q-tips, and a doctor was stitching my eyeball, literally feeding sutures through my eyeball. And
you could put that in a movie and utterly horrify me.
Like I mean, you have to understand who you're talking to here. Like, I couldn't put contacts into my eyes until I was like 25, even though I played basketball with glasses that were three prescriptions old. I mean,
I've never considered putting contacts in my eyes. My brother, when he was 14, I think I was 12, and he got some of those early soft contacts.
Yeah.
And one tore in his eye, and it tore his cornea along the way. And from that day forward, you leave my eyes alone.
See, I will say, me from 6 weeks ago would have shuddered when you said that, Daryl. But for some reason, I don't know. It's like, I guess I can hack it now. I don't know. But
things have changed. Things have changed.
Like it is.
You're on the other side.
I'm on the other side. I actually painted the picture pretty explicitly for a review for Jersey Shore Massacre. Jersey Shore Massacre, terrible horror movie, which is terrible. So I basically wrote up. This is some inside baseball, so hopefully Staley doesn't can us. So I basically wrote up 600 words describing in detail the experience of having sutures put in my eyeball with just numbing drops in my eye, And then at the end I said, and if I had to choose that over watching Jersey Shore Massacre again, I would go for the eye sutures. And that was my whole review, right? So that kind of got vetoed. I had to rewrite and write a different one. But that kind of tells you how painful the procedure was and how terrible the movie was. But anyway, good. The good news is retina is attached. I have access to the best doctors in the world, which is pretty nice to have. And the what I learned about the eye is pretty impressive. And I've got an instant icebreaker conversation. So
there you go.
And I'm doing a podcast right now with an eye patch, by the way.
Oh,
yes,
sweet.
That's right. So I've got
pirate radio.
Pirate radio, absolutely.
Well played.
So, but here we are. We're back 5 weeks. 5 weeks later, and we'll kind of just dive right in. I won't ask you to recap your 5 weeks of entertainment, so why don't you just pick one highlight, okay? I'm going to just put that on you. You have to think back pretty far, I know, but just pick out maybe one or two highlights if you want, and we'll go from there. Mac, why don't you kick us off?
Let's see. I'm going to assume I'm the only one who watched the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. premiere, so I'll go ahead and talk about that.
Go for it.
the show, It's a little improved, but it's still not everything it could be.
So, what was your biggest issue last year? And I'm gonna actually show my hand. I'm gonna talk Gotham when it comes around to mine. So,
I watched that too.
Yeah, we'll book.
Spoiler alert, Dave.
I know, that's right. Yes. So, yeah, Mac, tell me what was, because I haven't seen any of the Shield episodes. What was your biggest issue with the first season?
Just that it was so generic. It was just generic spy stuff, you know. It's like, you know, we got to travel to this place and get the disc before the bad guys get the disc. And they break into some high-tech looking place to steal the disc from the bad guys. And that's pretty much every episode. If it's not a disc, it's some other, you know, it's the briefcase or it's the whatever. Yeah. And so it was just really generic. But there were occasional moments where you could see that they were trying to do something creative or something different, and that was kind of enough to keep me going, saying maybe they're going somewhere with this. And so this new this new season starts off, they're really picking up the pieces of what happened to S.H.I.E.L.D. and Captain America too. And so I'm wondering if I have to keep watching in order to know what's going to happen in Avengers 2. I don't know yet, but... they're really making the most of the shakeup, and they've kind of got a new status quo going where now Coulson is the new director of S.H.I.E.L.D., and S.H.I.E.L.D. he's rebuilding S.H.I.E.L.D. in secret.
Gotcha.
So instead of being part of this huge spy organization, now they really are just sort of the ragtag group of underdogs. And so that was good, and we had some Marvel characters in the premiere. We had Absorbing Man. We had General Talbot. Characters we remember from the comics, and so that was fun. But and yet I'm still just thinking, well, it's, you know, something's missing. So I don't know, some element of personality or something, but it's just sort of generic spy stuff.
Now Marvel, Marvel aficionado you are, Mac, will there be a point where you might jump ship, or do you think you'll be on as long as it's on?
I don't know, because they keep, you know, they keep dropping little bits and pieces here of stuff that relates to the movies, stuff we recognize from the comics, and that's just enough for the geeks like me to kind of latch onto. Oh, that's a thing that I know. Yeah. By the way, the premiere also had a World War II flashback where we saw Agent Carter and the Howling Commandos from the first Captain America movie, and that was fun to see all them again. And so, you know, little things like that are kind of. What's keeping me interested.
All right.
And the spy capers are what's not keeping me interested.
All right. Okay. So we'll check back. Do you think, I mean, have they promised a little more, I don't know, star power as far as the characters go at some point? Or do you think it'll be more peripheral kind of Marvel personalities?
I don't know. It seems more peripheral. I mean, they're going to introduce... what's her name? Mockingbird, who's Hawkeye's girlfriend from the comics. And so that'll be interesting to see what they do with that character. And I think they're going to do another Asgardian episode, too. They're going to bring the Asgardians into it. So, yeah, who knows? Like I said, it's just like the show's not that great, yet I'm still kind of wondering, thinking to myself, well, let's see what they're going to go with this. Let's see what they're going to do.
All right. All right.
You know, Mac, hearing you describe S.H.I.E.L.D. in relation to the movies reminds me of the summer I spent deep in the Lost Experience ARG.
Well, I remember that.
Which was a lot of fun, but like promised like this great time the show, and I don't remember what the end was. It was probably Drink Your Ovaltine, but it was like I didn't really have none of that was actually important for what was happening on the show, but it was fun.
Come visit Hawaii. Great off-season
race. Man, oh, wow.
You were into
that. That was a different time.
Were,
I was.
Yeah,
was,
yeah was, you were really. Fun. You had a great time. I remember that. Yeah.
It was fun.
Nice. All right, Daryl, what do you got for us?
Well, because my last couple of months have been basically a jumble of moving and figuring out this how to write about this job that I'm doing, I haven't had a lot of entertainment beyond wrestling.
All right.
So I'm not going to bother you with that. I'm just going to pretend like we recorded 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
And I'm going to say that last week I reviewed for the site, don't believe it's appeared yet, the Criterion, the first David Lynch Criterion in Eraserhead, which I hadn't seen in about 10 years. So it was pretty interesting. A lot funnier than I remembered it 10 years ago. So there's that.
All right. Now I'm going to continue to ask you, have you seen The Raid 2 yet?
I have not seen The Raid 2 yet, and I apologize.
You're running out of excuses, my friend. I've seen it like five times already.
Well, technically, I haven't given you an excuse.
That's true. You know, that's true. You haven't. Absolutely right.
I'm full of them, but I'm not. But I just need to see it.
I do have to say now, Mac. I know you've seen it, Eric. I don't know if you've had a chance to see The Raid 2, but like that is like the best movie to watch with someone who's never seen it. You know, that's what I've realized. Like, even though it's not the best to sit and watch again by yourself because, you know, there's some buildup, but it's one of those movies where you just like to see someone react.
Right? Well, like, Raid Redemption certainly had that.
That's true. Absolutely. Raid Redemption's like that. So it's just, you're more interested in seeing how someone reacts to Hammer Girl appearing or Baseball Bat Boy appearing or the kitchen fight, you know.
The kitchen fight,
I mean, and that still remains, like, I've seen that 1,000 times and it still remains a complete thriller. But
by our next filibuster, I will
maybe,
have seen
it. Very good. That
will force an excuse.
That will force the first of many. So.
All right, Eric, also, you know, Eraserhead is another good one to watch with someone who's never seen it before.
It's
in a
true.
In a different way, but, yeah.
In a different way because, okay, so I don't want to go too long on this, but when I first saw it, I was probably about 13, 14 years old. And I thought, it turns out, and I thought up until this time watching it, that it was like 78 minutes long, but it's actually 90 minutes. And I felt like it was the longest 80 minutes of my life when I first watched it. I enjoyed it. It wasn't my introduction to David Lynch, but I enjoyed it. And when I first saw it, but in the subsequent times, and I don't know how many times I've seen it, 3 or 4 or 5, I don't know. It's always a little different, but this time it was funny. It wasn't disturbing at all or weird. It was just funny. It's well made, but some girl that's basically Sherilyn Fenn with terrible skin and huge cheeks is smashing sperm in a radiator at the end. It's just ridiculous. It's absurd and hilarious. So, and a great presentation from Criterion for it. So,
nice. All right.
Well, all of that's in The Raid 2, huh?
All that is amazing.
They're amazing. Yeah.
Oh, man. Just imagine Hammer Girl meeting Radiator Girl. That'd be
great.
Awesome.
Good times.
Some cheek busting.
That'd be a great cosplay, I think.
let's imagine something I like to call a Raider Head. I think it would look a little something like that.
That's where we would cut to something that was post-produced by our intern, but we'd have none of that.
Exactly.
So actually, we'll just segue over to you, Eric.
Let's see. Some TV stuff, I guess. I've gone back some little mini marathons on my own. I decided I was going to go back and rewatch all of The Simpsons that I owned.
Were you inspired by the FXX marathon?
I was. Yeah, I'm going to go back to it. I got as far as like mid-season 3. Really good stuff. Obviously. And I've also started going back and rewatching The X-Files on Netflix because it's been a long time. So
how's that aged for you?
It's pretty good. I mean, it's very I definitely enjoy some episodes more than others. And they spent a lot of the first two seasons kind of in the woods around Vancouver being stalked by something or other. But I think it's still a great show. I'm looking forward to when that eventually gets a Blu-ray release. It's been teased for a very long time.
Excellent.
And one last thing, a newer TV show that I watched thanks to Hulu Plus.
Name dropping like
if I mention them enough times, it really is. If I mention them enough times, I think they'll give me another free month.
A couple
weeks, perhaps.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, apparently, as Mike Staley said, 1.5 million downloads for our podcast family. So maybe someone is in there. Possibly.
But no, I caught the first season of the show called Nathan for You. Which is a Comedy Central show. I caught the first season on Amazon Prime Instant.
Nice.
Another service that could give me something for free. And then the second season they had on Hulu. It's a Comedy Central show. It's sort of a semi, part stage, part reality comedy show where this comedian named Nathan Fielder, who his pitch on the show is that he graduated from a Canadian business school with pretty good grades, and so he goes around to these businesses that are having problems and offers them solutions to increase their business, and they're all crazy and ridiculous solutions.
Gotcha.
that they try. There's one where there's a gas station that's having trouble, so he suggests that they offer $1.75 gas with rebate, but to fulfill the rebate, the customer has to take the slip up to the top of a mountain that's like a 2-hour hike. and put it in a box at the top of the mountain.
Nice.
See, it's funnier than that because you didn't laugh.
No.
It's really funny. So, if you haven't seen it at all and you have Amazon, check it out.
Right.
If you have Plus, you can go all the way through the much-publicized Dumb Starbucks episode, which was got some press when it came out.
Very nice.
So, on the topic of streaming services, when am I going to have to buy this supposed Yahoo service to watch Community Season 6?
Is it going to be purchased? Something you
pay for? I think it's just something.
It's like the Yahoo website. Screen. Is it the Yahoo Screen service they do? Right. I mean, similar.
Is it a pay service? I mean, I've never heard of any.
I've never paid for. I mean, even like, that Bachelor knockoff. I was thinking that it was going to be something like that, right? I mean, just a regular show that they stream, right?
Burning Love.
Yeah, Burning Love. Right.
That was awesome. I'd be surprised. I feel like if people had to pay for Yahoo to watch Community, we would have heard about it by now.
Right.
It's got to just be on their website, just a free streaming thing.
Okay, I don't know anything about Yahoo, whatever.
I don't know if they had it. I'm trying to see if they have like a pay or premium.
I'm sure they just put ads in front of it.
Yeah, right.
Okay,
right.
Fair enough. Well, good.
There you go.
Then I'll watch it for sure.
All right. So on my end, before I get into Gotham, but I got to say that for the second, like as I was recuperating, I watched a show that. Again, I watched the show, and it just kind of solidified that. I guess it's my favorite show of all time, I think. And we already made a reference to it. We talk about it all the time. But it's Arrested Development. Like, right now, my wife and I are going through them all again. You know?
Oh, it's the best.
And I can't tell you how many times.
How many times? How many times do you think?
No idea.
Like,
I'm telling you.
Give me a guesstimate.
Double digits for every episode.
Because I can't give you a good idea either.
Double
give me
digits
a
for every episode. You know? And, like, you know, things. Some of the things dawn on me. Like there's no, you know, I mean... We'll set aside season 4 because it's his own animal, I think. But the first 3 seasons that aired on Fox, I can't. Can you think of any like clunker episode in there? Like, is there?
No.
I mean, we're going through all of them, and I'm trying to
it's
think of one that I dislike that doesn't.
It was like fully formed right from the start.
That's right. Like,
I would. Right I'd out love of the, to find
right
somebody
gate, right out of the gate.
I'd love to find somebody who's never seen an episode and watch the whole season with them for the first time, or watch the whole series. You know, for the first 3 seasons, I guess, and see their reaction to it. Because all of us who – all of us, I guess, have watched the show – we've probably watched the show at least collectively 40 times.
Oh, like,
I've watched it at least 15.
I mean, I really have lost count. I mean, I'm just saying, like – there's something about it that it just brings, like, it's like a soothing balm. Like, we watched them when Carrie had our first child. We just were in the, you know, we're in the hospital room. You know, she was recovering, and we put on Arrested Development. And we watched Arrested Development.
And well, and I can hear that trumpet, that first trumpet sound when they open up the first season, the first episode of the first season. I can hear it distinctly as they, like, trumpet sound and, like, fall into that speech with George Bluth with the cowboy hat on. We're moving, partner. What's the slogan? Do you remember?
I don't know. I can't. I should know because I've seen it a million times. But
right. But I don't know either.
I mean, I think, like, to Mac's point, it's just amazing that it came out of the womb fully formed. And the characters
it really did.
In the pilot were very much like that in the final episode. Like, you know, obviously, Tobias wasn't Mrs. Featherbottom, but it was essentially an extension of how crazy he was.
He was still on the boat of homosexuals.
That's right.
That Lucille was complaining
Absolutely.
About. So
I don't know. It's just like even other favorite shows of mine, like Seinfeld, for example, took a while.
Yeah.
I mean, the original, the early episodes are like unwatchable, you know, and those are characters that don't even get close to what they became, like, when they were popular. And
well, and
the
I guess this
has been talked
about. Absolutely
the
same with Simpsons, yeah.
But if you were to take seasons 1 through 3 of The Simpsons, seasons 1 through 3 of Seinfeld, seasons 1 through 3 of any show, none of them stand up to seasons 1 through 3 of Arrested Development.
With the possible exception of Airwolf, but we'll let that one.
That's a different.
I would suggest the Community might be up
Community?
There. But maybe not as high as Arrested Development, but it that hit the ground running, I think, too.
It kind of hit the ground running, although
kind of different. Like, some of the characters in the beginning Community, you know, definitely changed. You know,
sure.
Like, you know, like it changed like, why am I blanking? The blonde girl, help me out.
Britta.
Yeah. I mean, she changed a lot. Like, you know,
I think Troy probably changed more than anyone.
I agree, absolutely.
I mean, I think maybe character consistency, wasn't there. But I think as far as it being very funny, it was.
It was always funny. I'm missing. I have all the DVDs. Not this one. Not the season four, or the new one, obviously. But of the first three seasons, I have all the discs, but I have somehow lost the first disc of season one. And I don't care. I don't care about the meeting. Those aren't good episodes. They have funny bits, but they aren't part of the thing for me. So I can take or leave those first few episodes. But unlike most shows, I think they made adjustments to their characters in the first five or six episodes.
Sure. Arrested Development has a kind of clear authorial voice from the beginning, and it doesn't change. I mean, it's kind of like, well, this is a weird comparison. It's kind of like season one of True Detective in that way, that it's one guy kind of putting it together. I don't know why that's not that, but it's
different
like
shows.
It is totally different show. But at the same time, it's like here's a clear voice. Here's a clear, you know, this is coming out exactly as the creator wants it to come out.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No,
I was gonna, as an aside, a little shout out to Mitch Hurwitz and Community. Mitch Hurwitz.
Oh, that's a hilarious cameo.
Mitch Hurwitz's cameo as Coogler.
Coogler.
In the season five.
He just wants to be cool.
In the season five Meow Meow Beans episode. A great season.
The best episode of season five. And the best intro, the best pre-credit sequence of the entire series, in my opinion.
Right.
Well, there you go. So basically, anyway, we landed where we always land, that we like Community and Arrested Development. It just continues to be. I mean, I still pick up things. Like the episode, the public relations one, where she comes in and says, George Michael, you're happy with yourself. He says, yeah, you know, I got the bum away from the banana stand without hurting his feelings. And there he is sitting at the table with a balloon, right? And then there's a little later in the episode, they show a newspaper shot and top, you know, the big Bluth article, and it's highlighted, but you look right to the corner, bum gets balloon. That's an article.
I never noticed that. See, that's the great thing.
I never noticed
that. All sorts of stuff in that show that it's always rewarding.
It is. It just always, yeah. So, I mean, I guess I'm just in the corner. I cannot think of, like, a show that I just enjoy so much.
It's my favorite. It's my favorite television comedy of all time, without a question.
Yeah. So I don't. So that's just a shout out to what we always shout out to. But to new stuff, I will say.
But it's been 5 weeks, so
it has been 5 weeks.
Maybe people have forgotten about it. Arrested Development.
That is true. we keep talking about it. I'm just start remembering all the stuff I just recently watched. You know, it's like, oh, okay. Yeah, sure, she got a crocodile in spelling, but okay, stop. I just stopped. anyway, new shows. So Gotham. So I think obviously my love for Batman is pretty well established. So I'm kind of going in, you know, with relative, you know, wanting to really like this show. Although I have to say, like, the trailers and some of the stuff I heard was like, well, you know, it's kind of like an uphill battle. It's a Batman show without Batman. Is it going to be too procedural? Are they going to be like working too hard to contrive the DC mythology with like these young versions of the super criminals? But I have to say, I really enjoyed it. Maybe that's a biased take, but I just really enjoyed it a great deal. And there's just a couple things that stood out to me. Like I thought the brute, like opening with the, you know, whatever, spoilers, of course, but it opens with the Wayne murders. And I thought it was really well done. I was interested with, they had this Catwoman showed up, you know, this little girl, but she doesn't say anything. And she just kind of shows up, like, during these pivotal times where Bruce is. And it was just kind of interesting the way they started tying those two together. I thought that was kind of cool. But the Jim Gordon dynamic with Bullock, I thought that was, like, an actually interesting dynamic. They had good chemistry. The Penguin's in it, and he's, like, an interesting character as well. But what really jumped out at me about the movie, like, I thought they really built a pretty decent world with Gotham. And with the angle that Bruno Heller might be taking here, and he did Rome and The Mentalist, which I don't really like as much, but Rome I'll cling to. Like, he set up Gotham as this pretty much like a powder keg that's ready to explode, and it's being held together only by intense corruption. And I think and that was kind of like Falcone shows up and he kind of articulates that. But it's basically the corruption is so rooted deep into police and the mob and it's all together that if you try to take any of that down, then all hell will break loose. And then that would probably require someone dressed up as a bat. You know, that's where you take that thinking. Mm-hmm. But I just thought that was kind of an interesting approach. And just as far as entertainment, I just thought it was just entertaining. I mean, my expectations actually kind of moderate because I wasn't exactly feeling the buzz beforehand. But I don't know. And I don't know if you had seen it. Mac, you said you had seen it. But I just came away pretty impressed, to be honest. And I'm excited to see where it goes. But, again, I am a Batman fanboy through and through.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I'm still, though, in kind of let's see where they're going with this mode. But there was so much. They dropped in so many Easter eggs in that one pilot. That it's like, where are they going to go? What are they going to do now? You know, pretty much all of the main characters in Batman's rogues gallery all had cameos, and there were others that got little mentions, and so it's like, you know, by the end of the hour, your head's just spinning with all the different Easter eggs, and it's like, okay, well they've introduced pretty much all the major bad guys, or these guys. Going to get their own episodes later down the road?
To be honest, like that was my fear going in, but I felt like, yeah, there was Easter eggs there, but I just can't see a whole episode, dedicated to Poison Ivy as a 9-year-old, you know? Like,
right, but that's what I'm wondering.
I just don't see that. I mean, if that happens, I'll be disappointed. That would be
The Riddler is
job,
the...
I'd be surprised that Bruno Heller would be.
But you're right about the nature of corruption. You know, part of the Batman mythology is that Gordon is the one good cop surrounded by all the corrupt cops. But that only rarely gets played up for all it's worth.
Right.
And so I'm kind of looking forward to that, you know, one good cop surrounded by a bunch of bad cops. Because that's something it's always given lip service to in Batman, but it's about time we actually brought it to the forefront and actually really told that story.
Yeah.
I like what you said, Dave, about that kind of powder keg feeling at the end. And I'd say the end kind of got me more interested and excited in the episode than most of what came before. Only because I'm not super into prequels that are try to like tie everyone together and or kind of rely on, hey, you know this person, and ooh, I know this person, ooh, I know that person, I know that. You know, exactly. It's kind of like it just becomes a whole of like, oh, I know that, I don't know that, I don't know that, and it's not really. I don't know, can be lazy. I like that it ended with a kind of a, you know, that sort of Gotham angle and the whole. I like the end sequence on the pier. I thought that worked well. I'll probably keep checking it out. I'm not as invested in it, I guess, as you seem to be, but that's good. I'm glad that maybe this will be your shield, Dave, your Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
your
Agents of Gotham.
Well, like, I will say this, though. I mean, we've talked about this with as far as Arrow goes, right, Mac? Whereas it seems like S.H.I.E.L.D. seems to, like, withhold a lot of these things. You know, when DC goes on TV, they seem to be very generous with their stuff, right? So we're taking Gotham to task for showing all of these all these recognizable faces. And Arrow, again, just opens up the vault and lets it spill out. And, the Flash is coming next week. And, you know, there's all this talk about what's coming from the Flash, you know. And we got a Prison Break reunion, by the way, coming to the Flash. But a little heads up. Lincoln and whatever his face was, they're coming together as Captain Cold and Firestorm, Mac.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so.
I'll take this opportunity to say the Flash has the dumbest villains. The dumbest villain names, anyway. I mean, I don't know. Maybe Weather Wizard is awesome, but
not Weather Wizard.
It's a terrible name.
Mirror Master, Gorilla Grodd.
That's right. The Gorilla Grodd, Captain Gold.
The Boomerang guy.
But it's no
Captain Boomerang. Yeah.
It's no the Leaper, whatever his name was, right, Mac?
Oh, Batroc the Leaper.
That's no Batroc the Leaper. That's for sure. So yeah, I don't know. The hooks got into me for sure with building Gotham up and what's happening. And I'm on record of, like, I'm really sick of origin stories. In fact, I'm glad whatever Batman versus Superman becomes, I'm just glad I don't have to sit through another origin story of Batman, you know? But yeah. I am sitting through one now, I suppose. But I like the context that's building. Like just the Catwoman stuff, appealed to me just because she's just kind of showing up but that you know that there's going to be kind of a iconic relationship towards the end. So I don't know. We'll see. Like I said, I'm in the tank when it comes to Batman stuff, but I liked it a lot more than I expected to. So
I'd almost rather it be a show about Gordon doing police work in Gotham than all these characters you know and kind of like tying them in.
I would be shocked. I would be shocked. Maybe it happens.
I'm sure they won't do that, but it's just, I mean, I
would be shocked if you see episodes like do that.
I don't know. I mean, you probably see one
Joker related until like a season finale or something. I mean, I'd be surprised if you saw Poison Ivy again.
Sure.
Until season 3. I just don't. I think they may. You know, that was you got to come out strong in pilot season, and they and maybe that's pandering. But I'd be surprised. I'd be disappointed if it was just constant name dropping. So to me, the balance is give us the Batman mythology. But sure. I also don't want to be a procedural thing. I don't want to have to go – I don't like procedurals that much. So I need the Batman mythology to keep – because you know it's going to be procedural too. So you got to keep that infused with the Batman mythology.
And maybe – and I don't know that I really want another TV procedural, but I want it to be its own thing. I don't want it to be, you know, reliant entirely on, you know, foreknowledge going in and just kind of like rewarding fans knowing who a character is when they grow up, because that's kind of – it's not very interesting – to me.
Cheap.
Yeah, I think so. I mean,
I think you can do that with Bruce Wayne for sure, you know, and I look forward to seeing that. But I just, again, I mean, I'd just be surprised if there was just like episodes, you know, the Killer Croc episode, right? Or a little tadpole or something, you know, I don't know. I mean, it would surprise me considering who the series creator is. I think, you know, I always kind of went into this thinking, all right, this is, you know, I've got pretty good faith in the series creator here.
Sure. Well, I mean, Rome, I've only seen the first season so far, but Rome is a great show, and that's a show that does a really good job of balancing, you know, major historical events that, you know, if you have any kind of passing knowledge of ancient history, with just the you know, the nuts and bolts character stuff that makes a great show. So to me,
it's interesting. So Rome is, it's drawing on this iconic legendary mythology. And then his other show was The Mentalist, which I tapped out of after a season. But that's like a straight up procedural. So maybe if he could bring both of those together, right? Because Rome actually gets dense, especially the second season, because he knew he was getting canceled. So he was squeezing everything in. Like Mark Anthony and Cleopatra, they had 2 episodes, and they just squeezed it all in. So now, like, hopefully those sensibilities kind of get tempered into this. So we'll see. But
it's also hard to tell, because it's a, you know, it's a Fox, it's a network show. How much of it's coming from like studio notes and, you know, we need to put these characters in to keep fans interested versus what his inclinations may be. Right. I mean, who knows?
I think that's always possible, though. That show did take some chances with the violence, I thought. I thought that it wasn't as like super broad and accessible as it maybe could have been. I mean, Penguin slashes the guy's throat at the end, and the two guys are getting carved up by some Leatherface knockoff. So
yeah, I was going to ask that was an Easter egg or any, that kind of leather guy.
Mac, I defer to you, Mac.
It wasn't supposed
I'm
to be
not like, sure.
I mean, he was the shortest Easter egg.
It's like Bane or Killer Croc or something.
Yeah.
It happened so fast that I wasn't sure. Some people online were saying it was Bane, but I don't think so.
I don't, yeah.
So I would say, like, so basically my takeaway is, like, I want them to focus, like, I like the Bruce Wayne stuff. I think there's interesting, there are always interesting stuff for that. But give me more of this idea of Gotham being sewn together, like, stitched together by this corruption. And I like the idea of Jim Gordon kind of swimming through it. I think that's of interest, so.
It's almost weird to have a show with supervillains before you introduce Batman as, like, the catalyst for, you know, this, you know, opening the Pandora's box of costume bad guys.
But I think, like, that's where they're building to. Like, to me, I just felt that's where that episode left me with. Like, you know, when this thing pops, and it will, then the costumes show up and all hell breaks loose. So, I don't know.
It's good. It's better than like, having, you know, Oswald Cobblepot with his umbrella.
Right, absolutely, yeah.
And people, and don't call me Penguin and all that kind of nonsense kind of gets a little... Anyway.
All right.
We'll see. We'll see where it goes.
All right, a bunch of negative Nazis. All right, let's move on to Mac. Super quick, because, wow, time has flown. Daryl, are you still with us? Did we lose Daryl?
Uh-oh.
Boy, we may have lost Daryl.
Daryl?
Daryl, are you there? Okay, I'm going to try to get Daryl back. So, Mac, why don't you kill some time and talk about anything of interest you've got for the site that's shown up either this week or last week, perhaps?
Yeah, more Batman. It's the new DC animated direct-to-Blu-ray movie, Batman Assault on Arkham. If you've played the video game Batman Arkham Origins...
I don't know how far along I am. I have played that a good amount, though, so...
Yeah. There's a subplot in there that teases a Suicide Squad spinoff, and it turns out that's this movie. It takes place in the quote-unquote universe of the Arkham games, and Arkham Asylum and the Penguin's casino yacht thing is both based on the environments from the game. And it's the Suicide Squad breaks into Arkham Asylum to get to steal information from the Riddler, but Joker is in Arkham as well, and Harley Quinn is on Suicide Squad, so there's drama there. And Batman is sort of only guest starring in his own movie. It's really a Suicide Squad story. But that's all right, because Suicide Squad, they're cool guys. You know, they're anti-heroes, and they're always watching each other's backs, because there's, you know, as they're taking out the bad guys, they're also stabbing each other in the back. So this is a very adults-only cartoon. There's lots of sex and violence and blood and
like
gore.
Is it an R-rated cartoon, do you think? Is this rated R?
It's not rated R. I don't know what it's rated, if it's direct to a home video, but I would call it a very hard PG-13.
So like a Willow PG. Correct.
What? I lost
like
you.
A Willow PG?
In terms of violence, yeah. But there's also a sex scene that's pretty gratuitous for a Batman cartoon. Yeah. So,
all right, thumbs up?
Yeah, it was good. I liked it.
Do you watch the Marvel animated movie? Like, how do you feel the animated houses for the Marvel and DC stack up with each other?
Yeah, Warner Brothers says it's a real powerhouse in animation, and they've been working with the DC characters for a long time now, so they've kind of got it down to a science. And plus, they've got a whole crew of animators who are working in different styles, so each movie is kind of its own style. The Marvel animated films, there have been some good ones. I really liked Hulk Versus, but others have just been sort of cash-ins on the movies. And also the anime studio Madhouse, for like 10 years now, they've been doing the Marvel anime, and... which, in my opinion, is only so-so, but they must be popular because they keep making them.
All right. Very good. Daryl.
I have returned. I was briefly gone. But this week, coming up for review, I have, and I shouldn't be as excited about it as I am, but I am. It's the 40th anniversary Blu-ray of Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Nice.
Yep.
And I'm looking forward to it. It's probably been, I don't know, 6 or 7 years since I've watched Chainsaw Massacre. But I always revel in it, and I'm glad that it's probably going to be the first movie to start my Halloween, October business. Speaking of, like Eraserhead, a funny movie that I have a hard time convincing people of, Chainsaw Massacre is hilarious and really is better, almost better looked at as a comedy than horror in some ways, at least for some scenes. So I'm really looking forward to it, and it looks like a really fine package.
There's something like at least four commentaries on it, right?
Not to mention four commentaries. I don't know about hours and hours and hours, but I believe that from the not doing any studying, but from a basic perusal of the back, it looks like pretty much everything that has existed, everything original that's existed on previous discs, is at least in some respect represented here. So it looks pretty definitive, and it's a new 4K transfer of it. So whether that helps it or hurts it, remains to be seen. But I'm excited to see. Leatherface saw into his leg at the end of the movie.
Very nice.
Aren't we all?
That's a universal sentiment, I think, for sure. All right, Eric, what do you got?
All right, well, moving from Texas Chainsaw Massacre to the Muppets.
Yes.
this week I'm reviewing Muppets Most Wanted, the sequel to the 2011, I guess, sort of reboot. And this is a movie that it seemed like it got a pretty lackluster response when it came out. I don't remember hearing a lot of great things about it, and critics seemed to be kind of bored by it. But I have to say, I liked it a lot. I was not expecting a whole lot from it just because of that kind of tepid response, but I thought it was one of the best Muppet movies I've seen in a very long time. I think I put up my review that it's the best one since Manhattan for me.
Okay.
I think it's like I liked the 2011 movie okay. I thought it, you know, it took a little while to get going. It focused a lot on, you know, Jason Segel and Amy Adams, and then, you know, Walter the new Muppet.
Is he in this one?
He is. He's it. Wait, which one? Walter?
Walter, is he in this one?
Yeah, Walter's in it, although he's a greatly diminished role, and they even have a couple jokes where they sort of, you know, make fun of how much he was in the last one and how much focus they put on him. this is very much an all Muppets affair. It's really more kind of in the spirit of something like The Great Muppet Caper, where it's, you know, it is like a comedy heist movie. There's a lot of different stuff going on. It's very, very funny. The songs. Written by, just like the 2011 movie, written by Brett McKenzie of Flight of the Conchords. And there's some really, really funny songs in there, very catchy. I've had them in my head all week. And the Blu-ray is cool because it has a, what they're calling the unnecessarily extended cut, which is an extra 20 minutes of good stuff. It's nothing that feels, you know, too padded. So I was really impressed. I think it's sort of a shame that I didn't, you know, no one told me to really see it until now, so I'm telling you.
Go see it.
It's not on Hulu Plus.
But oh, you can see it. What? What's going on? I thought Hulu Plus was a great organization.
They really are, but they don't have
that. That was another thing I noticed. As the boys are coming back from Mother Boy, they're driving, and remember he talks about Buster getting saddest? You know, and I saw that as a very competitive category. I didn't notice the first 30 times, but they're drinking Burger King. They're drinking out of Burger King cups.
Oh, sure.
Fantastic.
Sure.
Fantastic. Excellent. Okay. I don't know. This one's yet to be written, but I've watched it. So I watched it when it aired, actually. It's called The Curse of Oak Island, which I may have mentioned before. I'm not sure. It's a History Channel show. It's like a six-episode reality series just tracking these two brothers who go to this place called Oak Island, like up in North Atlantic somewhere. Now, I actually remember reading about this mystery, like in one of those Scholastic books from, you know, fifth grade, you know, incredible unsolved mysteries or whatever. And it was like some money pit that these explorers found. It kept filling with water. People died. There's like a curse on it. That, you know, blah blah blah. So it actually is for real here. And this tracks these guys investing in this and taking on and trying to excavate it and see what's up. So I watched all the episodes on the air. They're pretty interesting, actually. I think some of it was milked a little too much for dramatic effect when nothing really happens. Like, you know, we found this sliver of wood when we pumped this water out, and that means something. And it's like, yeah, okay, whatever. But still, I was pretty into it, although the DVD says they will risk everything, right? But the funny little secret behind the show is there's two brothers. One brother has got, like, he's all into the treasure, and he's really excited about it. And he's like, you know, what's his favorite? Mikey from Goonies with a map, right? But it's his younger brother who's financing the whole thing. Like, his younger brother is the guy with the money. Like, he made a ton of money, you know, in the energy industry. And so he's bankrolling everything. So, like, there's a scene where all these guys are sitting around a table. And it's like the last episode of the series of the season, and they're like, okay, we found this thing. Show of hands, do we want to keep going with this? You know, like, everyone but the younger brother raises their hand, which makes sense, because the guy's like, you know, they outlined the cost for this. It's like, no one else is putting up the money for it, and the guy eventually raises his hand, you know. It's like, yeah, look, if one guy is risking all of it. So I just want to give you a shout-out to younger brother. I forget your last name. When I write the review, I'll make special note of it, but you know, you deserve more credit for putting money up for these clowns digging in the dirt. So that's it. That's it. So that will be coming out at some point. Okay. All right. We are like 45 minutes in. Can we do like an abbreviated lightning flash ambush topic round? How can we do that?
All right.
What do you think?
Just do an ambush. Let's just do an ambush, Rand. It's been 5 weeks. Just do an ambush, Rand.
We'll be quick.
We'll put our heads down, and we'll power through.
I'd be lying to you if I told you my eye is not leaking right now. So let's get this done here. Okay. Ambush topics. It's been 5 weeks. Nice and fast. Matt, kick us off.
All right. First topic. Snobs.
Oh, my all-time favorite is... it's got to be Judge Smales. It begins and ends. If you are a Caddyshack fan, you have to say
he's clearly the best.
He is clearly the best. Besides the consolation. No, he is the funniest character in that movie.
He's the best character in that movie. Yes. He's what I rewatched that movie for.
Agreed. And I think that, he's surrounded by superstars, but no one delivers the lines like he's got the memorable lines, right? The world needs ditch diggers too. That's fantastic.
You'll
get nothing and like it. Okay. All right. Yeah. Judge Smales, he's the man.
That was my first go, but
all right, I'm gonna go with the Cobra Kai in Karate Kid, especially Johnny.
Nice.
That's it. That's all I'm gonna say. It's moving on.
He is snobbish.
He's a rich kid. Of course he's snobbish. Go. Rich 80s kid, I mean.
Okay, so this is not going to really be true, but I've been forced into a corner. I find it snobbish that the wizard in The Wizard of Oz would hide behind a curtain.
That's pretty good. Or the wizard from The Wizard, right? Little kid who thinks he's awesome. Double dragon.
Yeah, no, he thinks he's pretty rad. And, you know, speaking of that, the kid from Battlestar Galactica, or from The Last Starfighter thinks he's pretty sweet, too.
Yes.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
So they're all kind of snobbish. Screw them all.
How'd you make the jump? You really made that jump from Wizard of Oz to The Last Starfighter. Using only
the same plot.
Yeah, that's true. All right, so I guess it's you, Mac.
So back to me.
Yeah.
I've been rewatching all of the James Bond films, and I took a detour to watch the 1991 TV cartoon James Bond Jr. And
I vaguely remember that.
Which is Jr. is not Bond's son, but Bond's nephew, and he's pals with the son, the son of Phoenix Leiter and the grandson of Q. And they have spy adventures. But they're always being undermined by the school snob whose name is Noseworthy.
Excellent.
He's this tall, skinny guy with this huge bow tie, and he's always like, oh, I'm going to get that James Bond Jr. I'm going to tell the dean what he's up to. But then James Bond Jr., excuse me, gets back from his spy mission in time so that when the dean opens up the dorm room, you know, he's in there in his room, and Noseworthy is all like, oh, I'll get you next time, Bond Jr. So, Noseworthy.
That's good.
I don't know why this reminded me of that, but go back to Gotham for a second. What's with Alfred being a complete a-hole?
I'm actually intrigued by that. Different approach. I want to see why.
Yeah, you can say that again.
I want to see why he's a dingleberry. I'm looking forward to that.
He was a military man before
that's
he
true,
became.
Right? That was established, right? We knew that. Yeah. So, yeah, we'll see. Okay, I'll go next. Then we'll go straight from the biography. So, eye trauma.
Good.
Daryl's going to take mine, I know, but go ahead, Daryl.
I don't know. No, because people go ahead of me. I have to make sure that I have my facts straight.
All right.
Okay, it's – actually, Daryl, it's one that you mentioned on the podcast some time ago, but Dario Argento's opera.
Oh, yeah. That's hard eye trauma. Yeah, that's rough to watch.
The woman has her eyes forced open because if she blinks, she'll pull the needles into her eyes if she blinks, so she has to keep her eyes open. It's pretty grisly stuff.
Yeah, lots of, close-ups of little, rapid blinking to, she's trying to blink but then feels the pain. It's really – and she's in, a menagerie cage, so it adds to it. It's good stuff.
All right.
If you said Dario Argento, okay, I was looking something else up. Takashi Miike's audition.
Oh, yeah.
Has a horrific final scene that involves needles in someone's eyeball.
That's right.
Ouch.
We've been there, done that.
Among many other places the needles go, so it's...
needles everywhere.
That has one of the most, maybe the most cathartic end sequence I've ever seen in a horror movie. It's brilliant and disgusting and amazing. It's perfect.
It's great. I can't wait to not watch it again.
See this. This really. I should have thought twice about this topic because this really slammed the brakes on our forward momentum because it gets Daryl all wistful and misty with all these crazy movies.
All kinds of eye business.
That's right. All right. Well, let's pressure's on, big man. What do you got?
No, my big thing, my favorite one is from Lucio Fulci, another Italian director. Way trashier than Argento, who's pretty trashy himself. In The Beyond, I think it's The Beyond, but it could be Zombie. I was trying to get my facts straight, but I couldn't.
Well, mine was going to be Zombie. So,
is it the one in Zombie with the acid drop?
Oh, no.
No.
Or Zombie.
No, okay, you've got a different one. Yeah. Okay, so that's the one from Zombie. So yes. The Beyond has this scene where these spiders escape from a cage, and this woman simultaneously basically gets knocked down on a laboratory floor, and the spiders knock over a vial of acid that then drips down into her eye from the counter. Now, she never tries to move, so I don't know what the deal with that is, but it does a number on her eye.
Nice. Yeah, so mine was good. Yeah, mine's Zombie or Zombie 2, I think. You know, it's also known as Zombie 2.
Yeah.
Probably more well-known for the shark versus zombie fight, right? But there's a pretty – probably the craziest eye wound I recall seeing is this door jam splinter, and it's just up close and personal. I think it's a zombie, or maybe not. Maybe it's a victim. Their head just gets drilled into the giant wooden splinter, and then it's – like wrenched to the side or something. So
yeah,
that was pretty. I mean, they gave it to you. He went for it and he got it. So
you can tell what kind of movie podcast we are that none of us said Un Chien Andalou.
No, that's true. That's true. We are not artsy.
I don't know. We thought these are, all four of us are foreign movies, weren't they?
That's true. Foreign language films.
Come on. That's right.
Yeah,
that's
and there's the okay. So for the record, there's the cow eye thing and. In Chien Andalou.
Okay, thank you. Okay, very good. Moving on, Eric, go.
All right, my topic is talking on the phone while driving.
Well, I like it. It's good.
Ooh.
Soon to be banned in New Hampshire. All right.
Yeah, don't do it, kids.
Yeah, that's right, kids.
Sorry, don't do it over 16-year-olds.
That narrows it to,
Okay, I'm going to go with. I have to go with one of my favorite kind of. I don't know if it's a hidden gem, but it's just like. I think it's a great, tight little thriller that. Very popular in this house. Cellular. Speaking of Captain America, with Chris, one of Chris Evans' first roles. David Ellis directed it. I think he's passed away. Jason Statham conveying in it. So it's all cell phone. All it is a guy driving with a cell phone. But I've long appreciated that movie for what it is.
Let's see. On TV, David Letterman used to do a bit where he would just drive around New York with his cell phone, and there's a radio station in New York where people could call in with news, and he kept calling him with random things that he would see out on the street. And he drove by at the NBC building. He had Regis Philbin come out and wave, and he called the news station and say, "I just saw Regis Philbin." And just basically just driving around making prank calls.
All right.
It's a funny bit.
Very good.
All right. So, let's see. All right, what did I have? I just blanked out.
All right. You gotta be something.
I got something. Michael Douglas from Wall Street. Spent a lot of time. He wasn't actually physically driving, but he was writing, talking on his phone, and that made him. The way that he was talking on his phone made him reprehensible to me. So there you go.
All right.
That goes back to the snob question too.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
All right, this is inspired by a movie I saw while we were on hiatus. A movie called Lock with Tom Hardy. And it's basically 80 minutes of Tom Hardy driving in a car talking to different people on his car phone. And it's a it's a thriller, basically. I mean, the way it's shot and the way it's put together, it's very heightened and dramatic, and you try to you're seeing this thing unfold. But what's actually happening is not really thrilling, and it's sold as this like high octane thriller, and it's not. It's more of just a character drama, but it's really fascinating. I mean, it's like a gimmick of here's a guy on a phone for 88 minutes. Probably not unlike Cellular, except entirely different from Cellular. So worth checking out.
All right. Excellent. Okay. We're at the end. So, Daryl, take us away.
All right. So I've done this before, and I don't know how much anybody likes it, but I'm doing it again. So I reviewed an Italian crime movie that was a lot more promise than it delivered called Stunt Squad.
I remember seeing that on the product list, and I was tempted.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
not to be confused with the superior Stunt Rock, I'm guessing.
And I have not seen Stunt Rock.
Yes,
but
you need to see Stunt Rock.
I would have expected you to, Dave, to request it, but you would have been disappointed.
I think the red flags, I think whatever spider sense I've accumulated over all of this. Stunt Rock only put you back $50, by the way, if you wanted to get
that. All right. Wow. So, it's okay. It doesn't deliver what it promises, but that's not the point. The point is that the poor people at the printing facility decided that the sticker on the top of the disc should say Stunt Squat with a T instead of a D. So once again, trade me a letter or a few letters of a name of a thing and sell it to me.
I mean, change the name of something by a letter or two and then pitch the movie?
Pitch the movie.
Changing the movie's title, yes?
Yeah. I also have one of my own, so it became very convenient.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And I'm lazy.
Gotcha. This is going to take some thinking. This isn't a quick and easy one. This isn't like Beards, you know?
Do you want me to do mine?
Yes.
All right. So in response to that, mine is a movie called Mild at Heart, a documentary expose on the paste picante industry.
Good. All right. I see. I would not rent that, but I appreciate the effort to do it.
Yeah, it's a project of love.
All right, let's see. All right, so mine is going to be sort of like a continuation of Battlestar Galactica if it had gone on for another season. And this is Sci-Fi Channel's Battlestar Galactica. If it'd gone for another season, they would have introduced a vampire character who's lurking around and, you know, romancing the ladies and, you know, drinking blood and stuff. And we could call it Fracula.
Fracula. All right.
Oh, yeah. Gotcha.
That's good.
That's totally fair.
Or it could be a Matt Damon message movie as well. So I'm just looking at DVDs right now. I'm just going to pick something. Let's see. What do we have here? I don't know. Eric, what do you got cooking? Anything?
Best I have so far is Texas Chain Law Massacre.
Okay. Well, I'll let you cook that a little.
It's all right.
I've got that. How about okay, this is going
to
be
so it's against the law to massacre people using chains? Is that...
How about, let's see here.
It's half-formed, yeah.
So using chains for fencing might be illegal, like chicken wire only.
So where's the massacre then?
Those who use chain for fencing get torn up by chicken wire devotees.
Oh, okay. See, that could be a movie.
I don't know if this is my answer.
I'm giving more time, and Daryl should just shut up.
Talk.
I'm about to go with this because Jet Li stars in this lighthearted fantasy romp. With some deeply scatological humor at some points as he goes on a mystical adventure to find buried treasure that's being guarded by an incontinent mystical creature in Piss of the Dragon.
I'm
just looking because that's what's right in front of me. This.
There you go. All right, my actual answer
is a
little movie called The Maid Redemption.
That's good.
And it's a movie about a maid who works her way through a hotel, cleaning room by room, until she gets to the penthouse and confronts the final messy room.
Oh yeah, so messy.
Exactly. It's a lengthy climactic cleaning sequense. It will blow your mind.
It will.
It's brilliant.
I like that. The maid.
Yeah, I totally take the maid redemption.
All right.
I'll totally buy that.
I am dropping the USB mic in the water.
That's good. All right, that's it. So that is it for the Friday Filibuster. This is our maybe not so triumphant return, but we are back 5 weeks later. So hopefully you enjoyed this. And by you, I am of course referring to my mom. So that is it. So, Mac, Daryl, Eric, thanks. Mac, take us away.
It really is a fine establishment.